Hello, this is Eric Morris Eskenazi. I'm the host of the Iraq Dispatches podcast. Thanks for tuning in to this latest episode featuring an interview with my guest, Kathy Nesbitt, who's based in Canada. She has been running her company, Kathy's Crawler Composters, now for the past 20 years. She deals with vermicomposting. She's a worm farmer. She also has Kathy's Laughter Yoga and also Kathy's Sprouters. And I hope you find this interview with a Canadian entrepreneur to be very fascinating. Hello, thanks for listening to the Erratic Dispatches podcast. We'll be back shortly after a brief break. So, Kathy, your company, Kathy's Crawler Composters. Now, is this the 25th anniversary?
20th
anniversary.
Yes. Wow. Can you imagine?
That's great. Congratulations. That's great. I watched a lot of the different videos like on your YouTube channel about the history of the company, and like I was watching the Squirm documentary.
Beautiful.
It's great. I know that you before you started the company, I guess you were like a secretary for like 20 years, and then were you working as a social worker at the time, and then you kind of discovered you were working at a farm, and then you found out they were doing composting, but not so much the word composting. And then you kind of introduced that to them. Can you mind talking a little bit about that?
Well, it's like you were taking notes while you were watching the documentary. So I worked for 20 years as a secretary. That's true. Because I didn't know that being an entrepreneur was an option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So funny. You don't know what you don't know. And all the while I was getting my psych degree, and in 2000 I graduated and got a job at a group home working with challenged adults. And it's all interesting how the universe works and provides these opportunities. So when I started at the group home, that's when I discovered that they didn't compost actually, and they had a vocational program. And when I spoke to them about composting, they said they didn't need the fertilizer because they had cows. And I thought, wow, like people don't connect what they're doing. You know, here they are creating all of this food waste and paying a whack of money to get rid of it when they could turn it into something else.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I'm more familiar with composting now with like going to different city botanical gardens. They have like a little area where they harvest fruit or vegetables. They talk about they do composting there and within the park, or their volunteers who work at the botanical gardens, they will work with that. And then I guess now the city is trying to introduce composting, you know, with garbage and food waste as an alternative. So like where you live in Ontario, is it like very prevalent now where people are doing composting?
Yeah. So what happened in 2002, our landfill closed, the landfill for the Greater Toronto Area closed. Mm-hmm. And although Canada's second largest country, we couldn't find a spot to site a new landfill. And are you sitting? We started to export garbage to the US. 1,000 trucks a week.
Yeah.
Wow. So, you know, when the landfill for the largest city in a country closes, it's a big problem, a big smelly problem, in fact. And, you know, nobody wants a landfill in their backyard. So it was really just a business solution or whatever between the governments. So we had a vested interest to find a solution. You know, it costs a lot of money for the privilege of exporting our garbage to the U.S., Wow. And I laugh. I mean, I joke because otherwise I'm crying in the corner because it's so ridiculous. Like how irresponsible to export 1,000 trucks a week, you know, out of sight, out of mind. We'll just ship it out of the country. Yeah. Good idea. and actually really bad idea all around. Michigan, they're, you know, every state, just like every province, has a slogan, and Michigan's is Great Lakes State. Great Lakes, meaning water. So when that garbage breaks down, all that juicy garbage breaks down, it goes into the water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're welcome, Michigan residents. You know, like, you know, it's a horrible thing to joke about. It really is. And I had a solution. This is indoor composting with worms. So in Toronto, in many parts of Canada, actually, we now have an organic collection program. It's called the Green Bin Program for the fancy title. And it's actually the organic waste. So it's all of your kitchen waste, cat and dog poop, diapers, feminine hygiene products, like kind of gross. Who wants to? Those are not things that you ought to compost. In Toronto area, they're using that material as anaerobic digestion, which is without oxygen, to capture the methane. So it's, you know, as that food breaks down, it's energy. It's just that, you know, when it's breaking down, it smells bad. So many programs have been put in place because managing our food waste is one thing we can all do to help mitigate climate change.
Yeah, definitely. And when you first started your company, like was there a supplier when you first started getting the red wrigglers? Like, what did you do at the beginning?
Yeah, I actually found my first worms in my backyard composter.
Oh,
really cool. You know, I tried to buy worms because I was like, I think it's fascinating. I looked after, I bought my house in 93. I moved out of Toronto into a small town, and I couldn't wait to start gardening and composting. In 93, a teacher friend asked me to look after her worm bin for the summer. And I didn't want worms in my house, which is my business now. But I took on the challenge. So I had worms in my house for the summer. It was awful. I was a fruit fly farmer because I didn't manage it properly. And I said, wow, at the end of that summer, I did keep the worms alive. But I said, I'm never doing this again. If I want worm compost, I'll just buy it. Yeah. How many worm farmers do you know, right? There's not many.
No, you're the first one I've been aware of.
Right. Yeah. So it's fascinating now that I'm in this field. It's fascinating to me. Anyway, so fast forward to getting my psych degree in 2000, getting a job at a group home, and then the worms came back again. You know, I asked them, why don't you compost at the group home? And they said they didn't need the fertilizer because they had cows. And I was like, wow, right? Not being responsible for what they're doing, producing all this food, paying over here to get rid of it. And so I was like, why don't you do composting? And the greenhouse manager said, why don't we do worm composting? And I don't know if you've ever done anything that didn't quite work out the way you thought it was going to. And you're like, I'm never going to do that again. And then somebody says, hey, Eric, why don't we? And you're like, oh, no. And you get that feeling in the pit of your stomach. That didn't work out the first time. So that's what I was like, no, I don't want to do that. And then I was like, oh, it's an institution. They're not going to get worms tomorrow. Right? They have to have meetings, they have to find money, they have to decide if it's a good idea. So I started to do research into the red wigglers, and I was like, wow, I actually had an amazing shift of energy when I discovered the magic of these worms. You know, they eat half their weight per day in food scraps, they turn garbage into gold, like they're the original alchemists. You know, so I was like, wow. And fear is simply the unknown, right? The fear that, like, if you're afraid of the dark, you're just, you don't know what's going to happen when the lights go out. That's all. So I think that I was afraid of worms. You know, I didn't want them in the house. And I had that experience with fruit flies, said I wasn't going to do it. So then when it came time to start a business in worms, you know, I was ready. And I have the objections, you know, when people are like, well, I don't want to have fruit flies. Oh, well, I don't, what if it smells? You know, I have answers to all of those things. Not necessary. Yeah.
So like when you're like farming the worms, to like, or like in general, when the worms are composting, do other like insects or creatures ever get inside there that are like maybe scavengers are going through the waste as well?
Yeah. So what I'm promoting or advocating is indoor composting. You know, in back to Toronto area, 6 million people live in the greater Toronto area, half in condos, townhouses, without space for outdoor composting. So indoor, there are a whole host of microorganisms involved in composting and worm composting, but they generally will stay in the bin. They're just part of the ecosystem. You can put your bin outside spring, summer, and fall, but you may have a tendency to attract outdoor bugs indoor then, right? Like spiders could climb in there, or millipedes, sow bugs, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then when you bring it inside, now they're inside.
Mm-hmm. And like, I know that you mentioned, like, I guess you said there's like over 46,000 species of worms, or?
Four to 6,000, yes.
Wow.
Are
there any particular like worm species native only to Canada?
Well, apparently after the Ice Age, or during the Ice Age, all worms were destroyed in North America. I have a hard time believing that, just because the worms are so resilient, their eggs will overwinter. So I suspect that when the Ice Age hit, the cocoons probably froze and then may have thawed later on. So according to, I don't know, whoever it is, all worms are non-native in North America, all earthworms. Hmm.
And when in the beginning of your business, like, how did you first like start marketing it or attracting clientele? And who were the first ones to really like embrace it?
Well, you know, I was all excited. I don't have any entrepreneurs in my life. I do now. I didn't at the time. So I just had an idea. I was like, I have an idea for this problem, and here we go. So I just kind of jumped in. I did take a business course that helped me, you know, write a business plan and do my forecast and all that. And I just started having a table wherever I could have a table, like farmers markets and trade shows and home shows and business fairs. And in the beginning, it was a real slog, because I had no idea really what I was doing. I just thought, oh my gosh, everybody needs worms, and I'm the one to put worms in every house. Until I, you know, ran into people on an almost daily basis who were afraid of worms. They didn't want worms in the house. And, you know, they said, ooh, worms. And I was like, oh gosh, this is really hard. How am I going to do this? So I pivoted. I believe I am an entrepreneur. I just didn't, you know, I didn't have that in my upbringing. It wasn't in my circle, you know. So as an entrepreneur, I just pivoted. I was like, oh, people don't want what I have. Okay, what am I going to do? So I took on school workshops, and I started to go into schools thinking, now I just have to wait 20 years for them to have buying power. Yay, I made it. And that's true. And it's actually really quite affirming. Before COVID, I was doing anywhere between 100 and 200 events per year, you know, speaking gigs, setups, whatever, workshops, all kinds of stuff. And I have met people on more than one occasion who came up to me and said, oh, Kathy, you came into my grade 3 class, and, you know, because of what you taught us about worms, I took environmental education in university.
It's great.
Right? It's so beautiful.
And do like, are your clients like span throughout all of Canada, or do you also have clients here in the US?
I don't ship the worms out of the country. I do have other products. So most of my customers are in Canada.
And are you aware of other like worm farmers in other countries?
Absolutely. Just about every country has red wiggler growers.
Wow. And what's like the typical lifespan of a red wiggler?
Oh, you ready? Uh-huh. 10 years. They'll live up to 10 years. 10 wow. years. You know, one or two is average in the wild, because lots of animals love worms, right? Birds, raccoons, skunks, moles, voles, snakes, frogs, right? All of these critters, because they're just protein.
Yeah.
Right. So in the wild, I think, you know, maybe a year or two is average.
Wow. And I was watching like some of the videos. I think I know you've gone to other countries. Like you went to like Guatemala, and you're talking to some women entrepreneurs there about composting. That was really fascinating.
Thank you. That was really cool. You know, I don't know if you caught anywhere in my videos, but I don't have a cell phone.
And yeah.
it's part of my brand now. You know, I mean, I have a landline. I have a computer. It's not that I'm not available. I am. And although I don't have a cell phone, I am very prevalent on social media. And that Guatemala trip came about on Twitter. You know, I was on and I saw information about red wiggler worms from this organization in Guatemala. And I just tweeted out, you know, what a cool organization. Red wiggler worms are the way. A link to their website. And within 5 minutes, the executive director wrote me and said, you know, thank you for your, you know, your comment. When can you come to Guatemala? We need you. And I was like, wow, right? My ego was like, oh my gosh, Guatemala wants me. How fun. And then my second thought was, how am I going to go to Guatemala? You know, it's a poor country. I'm not independently wealthy, not yet. And just in talking to a friend, like, we never know what is going to come about from a conversation. And I spoke to a friend and said, wow, this cool thing happened on Twitter. Guatemala wants me to come there and talk about worms and how fun. And I said, I don't know how I'm going to get there. You know, I don't have money. They don't have money. And she said, I'm going to host a fundraiser. And so we screened Dirt, the movie. If you haven't watched it, it's a documentary all about that, like, kind of quarter inch of topsoil that's sustaining our life that blows away, and then we pave over and we make deserts. It's a really good movie. It's not a happy ending. It kind of is, because all of these eco movies have a positive spin at the end, otherwise nobody would watch them. So we screened that movie. We screened Squirm, my documentary. We had a raffle, you know, I think we had 5 original works of art that we raffled off. Anyway, the short of that story is we raised $3,000, like plenty for me to get to Guatemala and back.
That's great.
And donate money to their cause as well. So beautiful.
And like, since you started your business like 20 years ago, like, do you like study like the statistics of vermicomposting? Like, do you know how much it's grown in the past 20 years?
I don't have stats on that. I know that demand has definitely increased. Mm-hmm. And this cuckoo time has certainly accelerated the demand. You know, at first all the schools were closed, so people mm-hmm. were homeschooling. So at the beginning in 2020, March 2020, the phone was ringing off the hook for people like, oh, the kids are at home. We don't know what to do. We want a little project mm-hmm. for the kids. Like, what do I care how the worms get in the house? And then as you know, as time went on in Canada, we import about 60% of our food. So when our border closes, it's a big problem for our food mm-hmm. supply. So I think as we were shut down longer, closed, you know, locked in our houses longer and longer, people were starting to realize, wow, we should think about food. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should grow some. Oh, what do we need? We need to garden. What do we need? We need soil. What do we need? You know, so it was kind of a process. That's what I think, because then it was kind of, it seemed more urgent that we need the worms because we need to make soil.
And you like when you're doing your worm farming, like how many red wrigglers do you think you have?
At any given time, I've probably got about 50 pounds of worms, 50 to 100 pounds. There's 800 to 1,000 worms in a pound. So I have a lot of worms, a goodly amount.
Are there any things like in the composting that the worms tend to stay away from, like they wouldn't eat?
Yeah, they don't like processed food.
Uh-huh. Oh, really? Interesting.
So it's kind of all your fruit and veg, coffee, mm-hmm. tea, pasta, yeah. rice, kind of all your natural stuff that goes in. No meat, no dairy, no sauce is what stays out. If you add something that the worms don't like they don't eat any plastic. If an elastic band or something gets in your worm bin, no big deal. The worms are not going to eat it. It will just remain there.
Oh, wow. And since you've been involved in the worm business for a while, are there any worms that you're aware of that like the most rare of the species?
So of the thousands of types, there are 4 that are optimum for vermicomposting. So that's red wigglers are optimum for at least Canadian climate, the cooler climes. European nightcrawler, African night, those two, red mm-hmm. wigglers and European nightcrawlers are great for our climate. African nightcrawlers and Peryonyx are more of a tropical worm, composting worm, but more for they're more heat loving.
Wow.
Yeah.
And since now it's been, you know, 2 years past the pandemic, are you starting to do in-person appearances again, or are you doing like mostly stuff online now?
Still online. Yeah. I did go back to in school, did my first in-person in 2 years about a month ago. And you know, the children are different. They're delayed. I don't know.
Yeah.
Is that the right word? You know, not that they have a mental illness, just that they seem to be delayed from where they were 2 years ago of that age. I mean, that grade.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain it. I just noticed, for me, it was a marked difference in the children. And I don't have my own children, so I didn't have a gauge over the 2 years how they were. It was just going back in, and that was elementary and secondary. The teens are also damaged, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, do you feel like in the future with vermicomposting, you think it's going to be more prevalent? And also, what do you think is like the best way is to spread that information out to people to educate them about the benefits of it?
It's definitely going to increase. I say that worms are going to play an ever-increasing role in waste management, soil production, and therefore food security. I really believe that, because not everybody has space to do composting outside. So this is a wonderful way to do it inside. It's just getting over that psychological thing of worms in your house. It really is a psychological barrier. It's definitely going to increase. The younger people are primed, you know, they were born with this climate crisis, and it was drilled in their head. And they're very aware. I think that we can't have solution without problem. So for the creatives in the world, the people that have come at this time, there are lots of problems. So get working on those solutions, kids. Right? Like, there's lots of what I say to the young folks is, when I'm in schools, you know, because it seems overwhelming. It's like, there's so many problems. What do I do? I say, focus on something that really bugs you. Like, what for me, it was food waste. I saw food waste everywhere. And I was like, that's a resource. We call it garbage, but it really is not. It's something that adds the nutrients back into the soil, and just composting on its own is a magic process. So whatever bugs you and you have a solution for it, you know, pick that and work on that, like volunteer for an organization or whatever. But yes, worms are going to play an ever increasing role.
Do you think like sanitation companies will start embracing that, using worms, you know, for composting?
I'm not sure, because the challenge is they're living creatures, so you do need to manage the environment. You know, when you add in your food scraps, that's the heat. The nitrogen is the energy. It's the carbon nitrogen, right? The browns and the greens, but it's the nitrogen that really gets it heating up. And if it gets cooking too, like regular composting is thermophilic or heating up. Composting is so, and it'll get, oh my gosh, like really, really hot. You know, I think it's like 100 degrees or close Celsius. So it gets smoking hot, and that kills the pathogens, kills, you know, the organisms that may cause trouble. That's the challenge with doing it on a large scale, is it might become too hot, that then you're going to be killing your worms, and it's just too hard to manage. Plus, the worms breathe through their skin, so any toxic elements that might be in the landfill may be harmful for the worms. You know, I'll go back to the collection program that we have. You know, many people are aware that the blue bin program, the recycling program, is contaminated because it's different. Like, each municipality has their own rules of what goes in and what stays out. So if you say you live in an area where styrofoam was accepted, and then you move to a place where styrofoam is not accepted, you may say to yourself, well, they accepted it in my last house, so I'm going to just add it in. And I've heard people say, well, they can just pick it out if it doesn't belong. And it's like, they can't just pick it out, because they're collecting from millions of homes. Right. So they can't just pick out that one piece of styrofoam. They just look at the load, and if it's too contaminated, it gets landfilled. They're not picking anything out. They're just like, oh, that load is too contaminated, off it goes. So for all the efforts that we've put in up front taking off labels, rinsing them. You know, some people organize their blue bins so they're all nice and tidy. I don't know why, but they do. It gets dumped in the truck. Right, but we do. We want to, you know, for the most part, I think people want to do the right thing. If you don't care, you don't care. So the Green Bin program, which is the food waste, is an even bigger boondoggle, in my opinion, because now people that don't care are adding in really toxic things like batteries, like old paint, like, you know, just things that you definitely don't want in your compost pile. You definitely don't want to be growing your food in that, that, you know, the battery acid. No.
And I was going to ask you, have you written like any books though about like either about like, you know, educating people about vermicomposting or about your own experiences as a worm farmer and entrepreneur?
No, I have that documentary. I thought I'd do a movie first. And that's old. I mean, that's from 2008. So that's, you know, before everyone had a smart thing. I haven't. You know, I do a lot of talking. I'm Chatty Cathy. That's my parents' fault. I do a lot of workshops and a lot of talking about this.
And you go to, I know, like I saw a video where you went to like a kind of like a business. You talk about the business of it, of starting the business. And now you started the business. So you go to entrepreneurial events or like encourage people to start their own business.
Absolutely. Oh, yes. I mean, all businesses are the same, right? We're just flogging different products and services, but everybody needs bookkeeping and marketing and I actually have a workshop called Marketing on a Shoestring on how to get exposure without spending money.
That's great.
Yeah.
And your husband, he works with you too on your business.
Yeah. It's the two of us. Yeah. Can you imagine? Yeah. Not everybody could do that. and we, you know, it's really funny because I am very talkative and he's very quiet, and we have one desk and two computers, so he's there and I'm here. And it was a while, you know. I'd be like, something would come in my mind, and I think women and men maybe are different in this way anyway, but if I get an idea, I just start talking about it. I'm like, oh, da da da, because I don't want it to leave. I want to just get it out. Where he'll be working on something and then it'll be like now he's been interrupted by my, so we had to really create some boundaries where I didn't just blurt out stuff. Maybe I made a note of things that I could say later on. You know, because when you're working together and living together, there's kind of no separation between work and your life. It's your life. So you better like it.
And do you mind talking a little about, I know you're involved in like laughter yoga. You have a Cathy's Chuckle Club. Do you mind talking a little bit about that?
I would love to talk about that. Laughter saved my worm business. Yeah. So it was about 2012. One more person said to me, "Ew, worms in the house." And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so hard. How am I going to put worms everywhere if people are afraid of it? Like I was. And you know, I just really question why am I doing this? Why do I care so much? Why don't I just get a job and be done, right? Like get a job, don't worry about it. I really was questioning. And then I went to a business meeting, I guess it was. And the first speaker was a laughter yoga teacher. And she gave a 5-minute introduction. I don't do yoga. I'm sure it's a fine thing, but I don't even do yoga. And I still don't. I mean, I do stretchy things. I move around, but I don't do official yoga. Traditional yoga. Laughter yogis call it traditional yoga. I think it's just called yoga. And then I was at a business networking event. Hundreds of people. The very first woman I met was a laughter yoga teacher, same week, twice in one week. And I was like, what? And I started to attend her laughter club, the woman that I met, and I loved it. It was so much fun. And then I got trained as a leader. I love that so much. I got trained as a teacher. So now I teach leaders. And it really did help keep me in my business because it helped me become more resilient. Laughter helps us be totally present. We're not even thinking. We're actually not even thinking once. We're laughing full on. You know, because we lose our mind. We're just like totally present. We're not thinking about yesterday or tomorrow. We're right here, right now. We're secreting the love drugs versus cortisol when we're stressed. And I think the very most important part of laughter is the oxygen. We can live without food and water for a couple of days. I don't know. It depends how long. We can only live without oxygen for a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Right? So laughter forces us to oxygenate our beautiful body. And the brain requires 25% more oxygen than the rest of the body as an operating principle. So when we're stressed, we're not breathing properly. Our body's not getting what it needs. For sure, our brain isn't. Have you ever lost your keys, phone, glasses, and you're flopping around? You're like, I gotta go. Where are my keys? Right? And you just can't find them in that state because your brain is literally being deprived of oxygen. As we go into stress, all of those fluids leave our brain because we don't need our thinker. We just need those fluids to go into our muscles so we can, you know, fight, flight, or stop. Yeah. So laughter really did help me. It, laughter yoga was started in 1995 by a medical doctor in India, and his goal is world peace. There are clubs around the world. And during this cuckoo time, I really have been called to bring laughter. I get paid gigs. I was doing long-term care before COVID. Now, I mean, you can't go in person now there. And Zoom is a little bit challenging with folks that have dementia. Not impossible. It's possible. It's just, you know, it would be great if they had a caregiver or somebody that could help them on the other end.
So it's like laughter for like a form of therapy.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's just laughter exercises, not jokes or comedy. So you don't need your frontal lobe. You don't even need to understand the language, right? It's kind of little games. You make milkshakes, you do clapping and chanting. I say clapping and chanting. It's like a mantra. It's like one, two, one, two, three. And it's the words are ho, ho, ha, ha, ha. And that, you know, that really primes us. So when we come together, we start ho, ho, ha, ha, ha. And that says to our brain, right? We get in that groove of, oh, time to have fun. And once you go to a laughter club, you know, more than once, your brain says, oh, time for fun, and starts secreting the love drugs, right? We get oxygenated, we connect. Creativity in our brain, you know, so for any artists that are listening, if you have any blocks, go and do a giggle jiggle, you know, just go and laugh for 30 seconds or a minute, a couple of minutes, as long as you can, a full-on belly laugh. And then, you know, the block is gone because the creativity flows into your head.
It's great. And then like, are most of your clients, like is there a particular age range or like all ages, or you were dealing with like school kids as well for laughter yoga before the pandemic?
Not before the pandemic. The schools were strictly worms and sprout workshops. Mm-hmm. Now it's kind of all ages and everybody needs it. I think for laughter yoga, laughter yogis are primed for this time. We jumped online. So I have actually a free club on Tuesday mornings, 9:30 Eastern on Zoom, 30 minutes, super fun self-care. And I get people from around the world. I have like my regulars who come every week. And then I have people that pop in, you know, when they're available, men and women. I had a whole school come. I did a worm workshop at the school. That was the one I did a month ago. And I said, you know, I have a laughter club. And you're welcome to bring your class. And so she did bring her class. And then she got in touch and said, the first week of May, the school was doing things for mental health every day. And would it be all right if the whole school came to my laughter club? And I said, yes. Wow, what fun. So I said, you know, I did some games that were appropriate. I mean, they're all appropriate. They're all appropriate for everybody. It's not R-rated or anything. I just, you know, thought it would be fun to have more things that were appropriate for the young kids. And so I said, the school was called Woburn Junior. So I said, every time I say Woburn Junior, I want you to throw your arms in the air and say Woburn Junior. And so I can imagine, you know, the whole school at the same time being in sync, you know, being totally in rapport, breathing together, laughing together. And that's what the teacher reported after that day. Was such a magnificent day because everybody was high energy. They felt great. They were connected on a whole nother level. That school is in a poor social economic area. And a lot of the children come from immigrant families. So perhaps their parents don't speak fluent English. So during COVID, it must have been very, very scary. You know, don't touch the elevator button. Don't go out. No, you have to stay in. So it must have been incredibly fearful for the kids. They can't go against their parents. And then, you know, not really understanding what's happening. Anyway, what a beautiful day. I would invite everybody, all are welcome to come. We just get smaller in the Zoom room, right, when there's more squares.
Hello, thanks for listening to the Erratic Dispatches podcast. We'll be back shortly after a brief break.
Do you mind talking a little bit about, you have like a organic multivitamin called Kathy Sprouters?
Yes. Yeah, so I don't think I said at the beginning, but my working title is Kathy Crawley, Laughing Bean Queen. So it's simple solutions for today's challenges: worms for amending the soil, sprouts for eating, and laughter for overall health and wellness. So the sprouting part, I think the universe is such a neat place. It's you know, just provides these opportunities if you're, you know, paying attention. So 2002, my very first event exhibiting with the worms, there was a man there selling the sprouter that I'm now selling. And I didn't know anything about sprouts or sprouting, why you would eat them or how to grow them or anything. But that space, it looks like a spaceship. And it was flying off the shelf. It looks like a spaceship and it was flying off the shelf. And so when there was a break in the audience, I said, what is that thing? And why are people buying that and not my worms? And so he said, it's a sprout grower, and told me how wonderful it was. And I'll explain about the sprouts in a moment. And so I don't need to know why something works. I come from a place of, like, if something's working for you, maybe it'll work for me too, and I'm willing to try it. And so this gentleman, he was 72, he's 93, he just turned 93 last week. A professional ballroom dancer, so super healthy, vibrant, and 72 in 2002. And I was like, wow. You know, he looked super healthy and still working those shows, which are not easy, schlepping all your stuff there and setting up your table and just being exposed. Like, there you are, you know, as an entrepreneur or artist, for sure know that too, that, you know, there you are, that's your life's work, and people judge you. Can I get it cheaper? Can I have a discount? You know, what is this? Oh, I saw it cheaper over there. Get it over there then. anyway, so sprouts. So he said, are you ready? I'm going to sound super smart here. Sprouts are hydrating, alkalizing, regenerative, biogenic, and contain up to 100 times more digestive enzymes. And I'll break down all those smart words. Hydrating. So as we start to get thirsty, we're already starting to get dehydrated. So the sprouts are juicy. Alkalizing, in an acidic body, that's where disease can take place. Cancer loves acid. So sprouts are alkaline food. They help to balance the pH in our body. Regenerative, Alzheimer's is a degenerative disease. Can we grow back our memories? Probably not, but we can fortify our brain by regenerating ourselves. Biogenic, probably my favorite thing about the sprouts. Biogenic means life force giving. So when we're eating live food, we get the benefit, we get the energy from that live food. And then up to 100 times more digestive enzymes. So when we're born, we're given enzymes to process the food that we eat. If we're not eating enzymes in raw vegetables or sprouts, as we age, you know, our body uses our reserves. And as we age, we may start to get digestive issues. Mm-hmm. And we go to the doctor, and the doctor will write a prescription for enzyme pills. Mm-hmm. Instead of taking a pill, which hopefully has some green element in it, some live element, you know, we could grow our own and know what's in it, save money, you know, all of those things. Yeah. So this system that I have, you can grow sprouts in jars, paper towel. There's all kinds of different sprouting systems. This one that I used it for 10 years, and I would see Tony, is his name that designed it. I would see Tony at these like health shows and eco fairs, and he would have a table there, and I would go up and say to people at the booth, oh, you should get one of these. You know, it's really great. They probably thought it was a plant, sprouts. Mm-hmm. and in 2012, it was a big year, 2012, that's when someone said, ew, worms in the house, and I heard it. he said, why don't you sell this sprouter with your worm business? You know, I'd been a user for 10 years. I don't know why I didn't think of that. So I said, what a great idea. So I started to sell the sprouter in 2012. For 10 years, I only did mung beans. You know, the bean sprouts mm-hmm. in Chinese food? Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that they're the fastest. They'll germinate in 24 to 48 hours, very fast. They've got everything that we need. So that was the only one that I was doing for 10 years. So when I started to sell it in 2012, people would say, well, what else can you sprout? And my response would be, I don't know. And then they might ask, well, don't you get sick of mung beans? And my response would be, would you get sick of having tons of energy and feeling great? Right? It's my health plan. I really mm-hmm. consider the mung bean is my health plan. And what I missed was Tony said to me, if you're going to do this, start your day with 2 tablespoons of sprouted mung beans for the enzymes. Do that every day. First thing in the morning, before you eat, have the mung beans because they're delicious. So they're very tasty, easy to, especially when you know you're doing something beneficial for your body. If it tastes good and it's doing good, then I think you're more likely to do it when you notice the benefits. So for 10 years, that's what I did. I started my day. So people would ask, you know, don't you get sick of them? And my response would be, would you get sick of feeling great and having tons of energy? And then I thought, as an entrepreneur, what do I care if somebody doesn't like mung beans or they want different mm-hmm. ones? So then I started to experiment. Now I'm a sprouting monster. mm-hmm. I did chickpeas and lentils and fenugreek, mm-hmm. radish, all the larger beans, peas mm-hmm. and all kinds, whatever. I mean, any plant that grows into a plant starts as a seed. And then when the seed germinates, that's the sprout. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes we talk about microgreens, you know, alfalfa sprouts or mm-hmm. Pea shoots. They're no longer technically sprouts once they have a couple of leaves on them. Now they're called microgreens. I mean, it's just a technicality. It's still very beneficial. But as they start to grow, they lose enzymes. They start to lose nutrients. Mm-hmm. So beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for asking about the sprouter. That is
my help. And do you get like people like ordering this like from all over?
Yes. So that the sprouter I do ship around the world.
Wow.
I do have certified organic beans.
Right.
Now the beans, I can't ship those to the US mm-hmm. And to the UK. That's where I've had success so far. Some countries are very funny about importing seeds and beans. Mm-hmm. Australia won't have any mm-hmm. anything to do with that. You need to have, you know, special permits. Mm-hmm.
Wow. And like are you like planning to start any other entrepreneurial entities?
Isn't that enough? I believe I have world hunger and world peace solved with my businesses. I don't know. I guess I could take on another world issue. I don't at the moment. You know, I mean, having said that, I do have big plans with my laughter business. You know, I really want people to care about the planet. But when you're in a mental crisis, you can't care about the planet. You can't even care about your neighbor.
Right.
You know, like, because you're in a crisis. When you're in a crisis, that's all, like when you're in stress, that's all you're in stress. That's all you are. And so laughter really is the fastest happiness hack. And it just helps people get out of stress. So then they can, you know, so they can care about the planet or something else.
Yeah. I hope like more schools can implement laughter yoga into their curriculum.
Yes, me too. Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah.
Because nobody's skipping that class.
Yeah.
It really does help us connect, and it helps us become more confident. Yeah. You know, because we're laughing, we're connecting. I'm doing a lot of corporate work.
Yeah.
So imagine how it breaks down barriers between the boss and the underlings. You know, it just because we're all laughing, we're laughing the same language. We're just laughing.
Right. Yeah, it takes a lot of the tension out.
It does.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. It absolutely does. Because, you know, when if you've ever been in an argument, I know you have, everybody has. when you get in emotion, or let's use social media. Like, have you ever read a post or something and you get all in emotion? You're like, ah, how could they think that? And you get all in your head and you you might get those visceral experience where your heart starts beating faster, you're sweating, you're mad, you're angry because that person wrote that. And you may start to compose a response. I suggest to people that they go and do a little giggle jiggle. They go and laugh first because, you know, often we don't even know that person on social media in person. Like we know them through social, but we don't really know them. What do we care what they think?
Yeah. And it's hard to, it's like, you know, they always say, if you have it, don't ever argue with somebody through social media or through email, you know, you do it through either in person or, you know, over the phone. Cause you don't know, like someone could be putting something sarcastic online. You wouldn't know about it, you know, or you might just, you know, interpret it the wrong way and then get even angry at them. They're like, no, I didn't mean it that way.
Exactly. Right. And now we've got text. Well, I don't have text because I don't have a phone, but I know there's text now, which are even shorter. Uh-huh. And so there's even more room for miscommunications.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I meet a lot of young people who, when I say that I need them to call me, that, you know, they kind of go into a panic mode, like, oh, you want us to talk on the phone? They don't know how to talk on the phone. And the shame of that is business is done when you know people. We need to know, like, and trust people before we do business.
Right.
So for these young people that are hesitant, I mean, I understand that they're all in it together. They all text and whatever. You can easily stand out in this world by having that extra communication skill of picking up the phone.
Yeah, definitely.
Or writing a card. Can you imagine handwriting a card?
Do you mind discussing a little about, like, what do you feel as an entrepreneur, the biggest joys and challenges?
The biggest joys and challenges?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the joys are, for me, for the worm part, I would say when I'm talking to somebody and they're just like, kind of really grossed out, or they're very fearful about the idea of having worms in the house, but they want to do it. So they're listening. For me, the joy is that moment when they have that aha moment, when they're like, oh, and they maybe look in the bin, it doesn't smell. They get it. That is so, it brings me such incredible pleasure. I'm like, ah, beautiful. And what was the other one? The challenges.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of the same thing where it's regarding the worms. You know, I realized that without awareness, action is impossible, which is why I started to take on school workshops and speaking, because I realized that if people don't know about what I'm doing, they're not calling me. That's bad for business. Literally, that's bad for business. So it was a little bit frustrating having this solution for, you know, a big problem, which is garbage, you know, our food waste. It's a big problem. You know, it contributes a lot to climate change. And I realize that if people aren't, they don't know about it, or if they're afraid of it, they're not doing it. So that was a little bit frustrating.
When you're setting up the different bins for the red wrigglers and the composting, like how long did they wait until you like either replace the contents or the worms?
I'll answer that in a couple of parts. So for the do-it-yourselfers, you can get just a Rubbermaid bin or just any container. It's about 3 to 5 months from setup to harvest. And at a certain point, you'll stop feeding and the worms will have converted all that material, and you harvest manually, which is dumping your contents out, putting it in small round piles and harvesting that way. So 3 to 5 months. I have a system called the Living Composter. It's kind of like a functional piece of furniture, in that it's a chair. You can sit on it. And it's got two trays. Now, the trays are shallow, so it's about a month and a half for each tray. So again, about 4 months for your complete cycle.
And then can you use the same worms again, like later on a different composting?
Yes, you must. Yes, use that. Well, so that's another frustrating piece of my business, because I didn't have entrepreneurs in my background. I didn't know that I should have repeat customers. Right. I got to keep on fishing all the time. I hate that fishing analogy, because I have worms. So I have to get new customers each time. That's a little bit of a challenge. So anyone looking to get into the worm business, I would say, yes, you do want to reuse your worms, but you may want to sell the compost instead of the worms, right? Instead of selling your workers, selling the compost, because the compost needs to be reapplied just like any fertilizer. It needs to be reapplied, you know, a couple of times a year, or at least annually.
Are there like certain times of the year that like the worms are, they eat much, like they consume it much faster, like in the summertime? Are they kind of very sensitive to temperature when they're doing the composting?
Ah, that's a good question. I think they do probably have a cycle, and it's temperature based. So for me, I do it year round inside, but I do keep my place cooler in the winter. So it does slow down. And in the winter, we're looking at root vegetables, right? We've got things that are much coarser in the winter than summer. You know, we have watermelon, tomatoes, lettuce, and spinach. These things are all very fast to break down, and they're very juicy. So yes, I would say there is a, it would be faster in the summer.
Wow.
Hello. Thanks for listening to the Erratic Dispatches podcast. We'll be back shortly after a brief break.
Thanks for tuning in to this latest episode of the Erratic Dispatches podcast, featuring an interview with my guest, Kathy Nesbitt, who's an entrepreneur. Her company, Kathy's Crawler Composters, has been around now for 20 years. She's a very successful business as a worm farmer and vermicomposter. Definitely check her out, her website. Also check out Kathy's Laughter Yoga and also Kathy Sprouters. I've included all three links to Kathy's businesses on the Anchor FM profile page for this podcast. Also, I included links to her YouTube channel and also a link to her video documentary of Squirm. Please check those out. Definitely support Kathy's very interesting entrepreneur ventures. And for those of you who've been tuning into my podcast now for a while, I do have contribution donation buttons located on both the Anchor FM profile page for Erratic Dispatches, as well as the subdomain site through Brooklyn Digital Media Inc. for Erratic Dispatches. So any kind of contribution donation would be greatly appreciated. And I'll be back soon with a new episode. Take care. Okay, bye-bye.